The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's not just Utah. From the Northwest all the way into Southern California, with the extended heat wave comes at increased risk of wildfires. So that's something that we have to watch out for. Look at this into Salt Lake City, 100 degrees. That would be a record. If we get to 101 in Salt Lake City on Saturday, it will be the first time we've ever recorded 101 degrees in the month of September. As we head into the holiday weekend, we still see that ridge giving us the sunshine and the warmth expanding not only tomorrow, 10, 20 degrees above average, and it makes its way all the way into the Great Lakes as well. So make sure to check on your neighbors, the elderly, and make sure that your cars are locked so no kids end up getting stuck in those cars if they just happen to be playing outside.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that news from CBS. Good afternoon. It's good to be with you. I'm Drew Mariani. It is a scorcher in a lot of areas of our country. You know, my wife always says that if we take our dog Scout with us for a ride, she makes sure the windows are always down. You always hear about people leaving their dogs in the car, or worse, their children. And then the heat gets so intense, you know, baking through those windows. It's like a magnifying glass. It can be deadly for those type of people. I always kid my wife, though, and say, I don't know. Windows are down a little too far. I think somebody might steal the dog. You never know. Hot days, don't bring your dog with you. All right, leave him at home. So we're always aware of the temperature when we head out. So never too hot. But more than 50 million people across the Southwest, they're under extreme heat warnings and advisories caused by really what's a late summer heat wave. We're talking record-breaking high temperatures expected over the weekend. In fact, temperatures could reach as high as 127 degrees. I mean, that's, to me, unheard of. 127 degrees in Death Valley. California's Death Valley, 127. Ow. Right? 115 degrees in the greater Los Angeles area. I'm just thinking about the energy consumption for LA right now, for the grid out west. When it gets that hot, how hard does your cooling system have to work? How hard does the air conditioner have to crank? How much energy does it have to consume in order to keep you, you know, in a climate that's acceptable? 127 in California's Death Valley, 115 in greater Los Angeles. Got some good news, though. Temperatures will cool slightly at night. But, you know, you got to be careful, too. We talked about pets and kids in cars. You got to be careful for yourself. And I wanted to address this story because heat stroke is a real thing. There's a lot of real heat-related illnesses that are out there. Make sure you stay hydrated. Make sure you stay cool. And as you heard in the news report, please check on others. All right? If you know somebody who's elderly or alone, make sure you check on them. You know, officials warned that this heat, these drought conditions, and I'm going to ask you to pray for our country. And I do every day. I am so concerned about our country. I'm really asking God for his mercy. The combination of the extreme heat and of course, the drought on the West Coast. I've been asking God to send rain. The risk of wildfires is on the rise. And we know how vicious they can be and how many lives have been destroyed as a result of that. So the scorching temperatures, they're a result of a meteorological type of phenomenon known as a heat dome, and that's when hot air, usually moving in from the Pacific, gets trapped under a high pressure system, and the event's supposed to last into next week. So just get ready. Stay cool, okay? Stay cool. We covered the breaking news here on this radio program a little bit earlier in the week when Mikhail Gorbachev, the last leader of the Soviet Union, died. And just bringing you up to speed on that story, tomorrow is his burial. He'll be buried in Moscow. As you know, he was a committed member of the Communist Party. And Gorbachev, he rose to power in the late 80s or mid 80s, 1985. And that rise was amid really what was an incredibly weak economy in the Soviet Union. There was broad corruption everywhere. And he wanted to restructure what was a stagnant Soviet system. He was eventually ousted in 91, actually stepped down on Christmas Day, as we all know. And he was hailed by the West for initiating political reform. And I think Gorbachev does deserve a lot of credit. I think he was a recipient of a lot of grace, the consecration of John Paul II in 84. Isn't that interesting? March 25th, 1984, the world is consecrated. Russia, or the Fatima message, has been fulfilled. As Sister Lucia had asked, it took decades. March 25th, 1984, Gorbachev, He assumes power in 85, and what a different political leader he was, right? Over the span of, what, the next 6 years, we saw the fall of the Iron Curtain. We saw it. You know, he was actually given a Nobel Peace Prize for his role in ending the Cold War, and he oversaw that response to the Chernobyl crisis that took place, and he got his troops out of Afghanistan. And, of course, he's been a vocal critic of Putin. And I understand that Vladimir Putin's not going to attend the funeral. You know, he left flowers, you know, in his coffin. But Putin said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest tragedy of the 20th century. And I'm sure he sees Gorbachev as the person who helped to facilitate that. So I just find the dynamics, the political interplay in Russia, very, very telling. But look, here in our at home, right? Let's look at home. I don't know if you saw the piece. My producer Maggie said, "Did you watch Joe Biden last night?" And I said, "You know, I actually missed the speech, so I had to go back and I watched it on YouTube. So I got the whole speech unbroken. And you're more than welcome to sound off. Selena Zito's going to be joining me a little bit later in the hour here. We'll talk much more about it. I'd like to get your take on it too. President Biden." He condemned, you know, Make America Great Again Republicans, those who wear MAGA hats, those who like that moniker, MAGA. He accused them of being enemies of democracy and calling on their neighbors to defeat them by voting Democrat in November. And I just, to me, I sit back. I always try to see the big picture on these things. You know, why this speech 8 weeks away from an election? I mean, the president safeguarded himself a little bit by saying, oh, there's just these MAGA Republicans, as if though the other Republicans don't share the view. And maybe you're of the same view and you're saying, yeah, those guys are radical. They're literally branding these people. I mean, the greatest threat right now to Joe Biden, and I think the Democratic Party, is the thought of Trump running or somebody like him. He went on to say, I won't stand by and watch elections in this country be stolen by people who simply refuse to accept that they lost. He says, as your president, I will defend your democracy with every fiber of my being. And I'm asking every American to join me. It's a noble cause. Joe, yes, I'm with you, Mr. President. I'm with you. But here's the thing. You're playing us. That's how I see this. I really do. I see him as saying, hey, look, I really can't stand on the economy. I can't stand on what I did internationally with Afghanistan. I can't stand on our energy and a lot of the other issues that we're now facing, this energy crisis in the country. So what do they do? I am going to be the saviors. I got you out of COVID. I am going to save democracy. This is about bringing light to darkness. It's about being, you know, the hope for the nation. It was meant to be a very inspirational speech. In my own personal take, it wasn't. I mean, there's some things, of course, I agree with. And, you know, I want the best for this country. That means I want the best for our leaders. And I really want them to be clear thinking. What his script writers wrote, some of it was very eloquent and on point. But a lot of it, I think, was just an attempt to really separate, divide, categorize so many Americans. Here's a little compilation of the White House press secretary and the president last night, both just expressing deep and extreme, expressing that extreme conservatives are the central problem that we should be focusing on. They see that as the greatest threat in America today. Listen.
Again, we see majority of Americans who disagree. And so when you are not with where majority of Americans are, then, you know, that is extreme. That is an extreme way of thinking.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. MAGA forces are determined to take this country backwards to an America where there is no right to choose, no right to privacy, no right to contraception, no right to marry who you love. They promote authoritarian leaders and they fan the flames of political violence.
Those last few words, let's talk about that for a minute. No right to choose. He's talking about no right to kill a child in the womb, right? No right to marry those who you love. He talked about redefining marriage. And he went on a whole litany of other things. No right to contraception. it just speaks volumes to me about, I mean, all of these things. If you embrace them, and I'll be very direct about it, it's bad for our country. Killing children is bad. Artificial contraception, look, as a Catholic, as Christians, we have very clear teaching on this. We've seen the ripple effect of what a contraceptive mentality does to marriage and to society at large. Society is the building block of, the family is the building block of society. John Paul II said, as the family goes, so goes the nation. So goes the whole world. We've redefined marriage from that redefinition, right? What do we see? You know, we see the ripple effect of that. We're going to see polyamory, polygamy. We're going to see all sorts of weird relationships. And then we're also going to see those who oppose those being persecuted and discriminated against. And we are beginning to see it, and it's only the beginning. And this is what he is championing. He's saying those who think that those things are wrong, you're the problem. You are the problem. And that's how I read it, and it's sad. And so I say to you, please pray for our president. Pray for him. You know, he was baptized. He received his communion. He's gone to the sacrament of reconciliation. He's been confirmed. Let's just pray that grace manifests. And so he doesn't have to bow down at the altar of power and worship at that. Do whatever he's got to do in order to try to maintain that power. It's so sad. You know, it is so sad. Life is so short. And when you are in your 80s, you know, you're really approaching the twilight of your life. I don't know how many more years or how many more minutes the president has. But one day you'll stand before God. You'll see the ripple effect of everything that you have done. You and I will do that. That's why we got to stand for truth always, even when it seems politically incorrect. We've got to stand on our Christian virtues and on our values. That is what will make America great again. That is really what is most critical and most important. We'll talk much more about it in just a moment or two when my next guest joins me. Selena Zito will be stopping by. We'll get her take on it. She travels the country. She's got her finger on the pulse of what a lot of Americans are saying. And I'd love to hear from you, too. You can sound off. You might think I'm totally wrong. You might say, yeah, I totally agree with you. The number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Just one other quick little note here, and I found this, again, very telling. You might have heard this. I think it happened yesterday, but Texas, the state of Texas, who's dealing with this immigration crisis, and in the days ahead, I'll look at it. I want to look at the morality of it. You know, what's our duty to our brother? How do we... you know, how do we keep our borders safe and sovereign? How do we prevent this influx of drugs across the border at the same time? How do we help those who need a better way of life? I think there's a lot to get into the immigration situation. But Texas is overwhelmed. Our border states are overwhelmed. And apparently they sent 80 to 100 undocumented migrants who crossed the U.S. They crossed the border in Texas. And they arrived in Chicago on Wednesday. So that first busload of migrants, you know, they went to other places. They went to New York, California. Now they've arrived in Chicago. Here's a little bit from Fox Chicago reporting on it.
The first buses carrying migrants to Chicago from Texas have arrived.
Those migrants arrived here at Union Station on two large coach buses around 7:30 p.m. Lots of single mothers were seen, also many small children, many of the families from Venezuela. Texas Governor Greg Abbott had emergency officials organize the drop-off effort, saying it's in response to President Biden's open border policies overwhelming border communities in Texas. Washington, D.C. and New York are sanctuary cities as well. In fact, thousands of migrants have been bused there since the spring from the Texas border. We spoke to one guy who described their journey to get to Union Station. Take a listen to what he told us.
We just crossed the border from Mexico yesterday, and they said that they were going, we were going to be assisted here, and that's not true. And that's, so we are not asking for just for charity, but we just want to be assisted just to find a at least a shelter or a place to stay. And we just, that's our main request.
So we're going to see more and more of this. I don't know how you personally feel about it. It's going to be a wake-up call for Washington, D.C. It's going to be a wake-up call for New York. It's going to be a wake-up call for Chicago as well. And, you know, you're only talking a couple busloads of people, unlike the thousands that have crossed the border on a weekly basis. It's pretty amazing. So we'll see, you know, whether the White House does something to get this under control. It's going to be a continuing story. I'll leave it at that. It will be a continuing story. You're going to hear much more about it, and we'll see how it plays out in the elections in the days ahead. I want to share a little bit more about the president with you. Selena Zito, as I said, is going to be joining me, and you're more than welcome to dial in too. Our number's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can get in anytime. So the president does this nationwide primetime address, and he urges the public to protect democracy by casting their ballots for Democrats in November. I mean, that is an absolute blatant stump speech to me, you know. And of course, his critics accused him of hypocrisy, claiming that he aspired for unity. At the same time, you know, he characterizes Republicans as being extreme. And that to me is the frustrating thing. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people voted for Joe Biden because they didn't like the rhetoric of Donald Trump. You know, they just didn't like the divisive nature and the way his comportment, the way he conducted himself. I mean, there was a lot that people did not like. They didn't like his tweets. And Joe Biden comes out. We're in the middle of COVID. I'm going to be the rescuer. I'm going to get you out of this dark, cold winter of COVID. You know, I'm going to go ahead and be a unifier. And one of my favorite lines in all political speeches is this. It's used by candidates all the time. I am not just the president of the blue states or the red states. I am the president of the United States. Or as a campaigner, they'd say, I don't want to be just the president of red states or blue states. I want to be, you know, the unifier of all the states. And it's like, yeah, who doesn't want that, right? So he positions himself as a great unifier. Great unifier. And yet, what does he do throughout the speech? He points fingers and he throws rocks at those who are considered, you know, he calls them extreme conservatives. He calls them MAGA. They've been trying to brand that term MAGA as opposed to what it stood for. It was an acronym for Make America Great Again, right? MAGA. They're trying to brand it as a dirty word now. You don't want to be considered MAGA because suddenly you're an extremist. And he said, as I shared, I will not stand by and watch this election, you know, I will not watch elections in this country be stolen. He went on to say, and he went on and on. He says, look, not every Republican embraces that ideology, he said in a condemning voice, but he says, there's no question that the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and these MAGA Republicans. Here's a little bit more of the president's address. If you missed it last night, just a little taste of what the president touched on. And then Selena Zito will be joining me. We'll break it all down for you. Take a listen.
That the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans. And that is a threat to this country. These are hard things, but I'm an American president. Not a president of red America, blue America, but of all America. And I believe it's my duty to level with you, to tell the truth, no matter how difficult, no matter how painful. And here, in my view, is what is true. MAGA Republicans do not respect the Constitution. They do not believe in the rule of law. They do not recognize the will of the people. They refuse to accept the results of a free election. And now, America must choose to move forward or to move backwards, to build a future or obsess about the past, to be a nation of hope and unity and optimism, or a nation of fear, division, and of darkness. MAGA Republicans have made their choice. They embrace anger. They thrive on chaos. They live not in the light of truth, but in the shadow of lies. But together, together, we can choose a different path. We can choose a better path forward to the future. MAGA Republicans look at America and see carnage and darkness and despair. They spread fear and lies, lies told for profit and power. But I see a different America, an America with an unlimited future, an America that's about to take off. I hope you see it as well. Just look around. I believe we could lift America from the depths of COVID. So we passed the largest economic recovery package since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And today, America's economy is faster, stronger than any other advanced nation in the world. We have more to go.
And it goes on and on and on. That's part of the president's address last night. My big question right now is why? Why did he deliver that speech, and why did he try to be so partisan in it? Comes off as a white knight trying to bring unity. That was what he said in his, you know, his speech, when he was sworn in on Inauguration Day. And who doesn't want that? If that's true, amen to that. We're with you. I support you 100%. That whole speech there was it was not inspiring at all, very uninspirational. And at the same time, I found it to be very divisive. I'm joined right now by somebody who can give us some perspective on it. I always enjoy her perspective because she's traveled the nation and talks to those on the ground. She puts her finger on the pulse of what happens in Middle America, on both coasts, down south. And she always has a very honest and cogent view of many of these issues. Her name is Selena Zito. She's a reporter and a columnist for the Washington Examiner and also a columnist at the New York Post and a CNN contributor. And she joins us today. Selena, thanks for your time. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
I'm delighted. Now, there's so much to talk about. I'd love to get your take first off. Why did the president choose at this particular moment to deliver this primetime address? And it really seemed like his crosshairs were aimed at these so-called MAGA Republicans, these more conservative Republicans, as he likes to brand them. Give me your thoughts on it, how effective it was, how ineffectual maybe it was. I'd like your take.
So there is this belief, and it's pretty much sound belief, that American elections really begin, the starting gate is really Labor Day. And so this is effectively Labor Day weekend, yeah. Right? And so that was his kickoff campaign speech. You can call it nothing else except a campaign speech. And yeah. And it really bothered me a lot, in as much as the same way that calling voters in my home state of Pennsylvania bitter and clinging to their Bible and their guns, and as much as calling voters deplorable in 2016. This was meant to incite and divide. This is not a president that's looking to build a coalition. It's looking to tear down a coalition. That is a slippery slope that you walk on. I think their team are believing the polls that there is a pause in the trajectory for Republican wins, and he's trying to bank on that. And I think it was a really bad decision. The imagery was terrible. The darkness, the red light, the military, the Marine band. You're standing at a national park, the Independence Hall, everything about it. I can see how in their mind, like if you try to put yourself, I always try to put myself in their shoes,
yep.
And they're thinking, oh, this is great. This is wonderful. Independence Hall, Philadelphia. Right. We've got the Marine Corps band. However, when you are making plans, you have to balance out your place. But this White House has become so political that it doesn't have that sense of balance.
Yeah, it's so true, Selena. I think you're right. I made the same comment last night as I was watching this thing. The setting is perfect. The home of liberty, right? We have got the Liberty right. Bell. You've got Philadelphia, Continental Congress, a whole litany of things, right? Beautiful place for it. It's right down the street from Wilmington, Delaware, to the president's home. But it seems so dark. You know, the lighting I thought was terrible. The crowd, again, was quite small. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, it seemed like a support there. I was curious. I missed it. I actually had to go back and watch it later on YouTube. I knew it was on. I forgot about it. I got busy, and then I tracked it down. Do you know what the ratings were like? What kind of viewership did this get? Any idea?
Nobody carried it. none of the national news.
That's hilarious.
None of them. Absolutely. I think possibly maybe CNN and MSNBC.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't surprise me.
But I'm not 100% sure.
Wow.
But none of the network news carried it, and none of Fox News. But, you know, social media is ticking this around. And unfortunately for the Democrats, they're ticking around the dark part.
Of course.
And so this is not good for Biden. This was not the hoo-ha moment that he thought it was going to be. And I just don't think they understand. Look, you take this and you add on, like I wrote a story today. I hope people read it. You can see all my work at SelenaZito.com. And by the way, I'm not with CNN anymore. This is the second of four visits events that Biden is due in Pennsylvania,
Yeah.
And this is the second terrible, it's a terrible event. If I were a Republican in Pennsylvania, I'd be like, bring it on, man. Can you just stay here for the whole month? Because you're going to guarantee every Republican win.
Yeah. Well, you see so many of the Democratic candidates kind of shying away from him. I've got to take a break. Stay, Selena, I hope you have some time. I'd love to talk to you on the other side a little bit more. We'll pick it up on the other side. We'll take your calls, too. If you want to get in, feel free to dial in 888-914-9149. You may not have seen it. A lot of networks did not cover it. I had to go to YouTube to watch the actual speech. But I think it's important we talk about it. What is the president's view of the country? Where is he leading us? Is what he said actually true? You know, we'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It's like a civics class on the radio. The Drew Mariani Show. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is good to be here with you today. Just taking a look at what our president had to say about the direction of the country. Where are we? He has come out in a speech saying, hey, our economy is great, and that he is here to lead us out of the dark, cold winter of COVID and so much that surrounds that. He's here to battle and protect your democracy, because it's being threatened right now by Donald Trump and MAGA Republicans. It's interesting because Donald Trump is not even in office. He hasn't been for quite a while. My guest, as I said, Selena Zito, she has written exclusively and has traveled around the country and has followed the world of politics for quite a long time. And Selena, I want to go to the phones. Before I do, I just want your take on what the temperature of the country is, because I know you've often taken these road trips coast to coast and have talking to average Americans. I mean, so often we get one perspective from the media, either be very conservative or be very liberal, or, you know, the social media will be pushing certain things, and it's not always reflective of where the heart of America truly is. How do you read the winds right now in this country? Where are people, how are they viewing the president, the economy, and where we are in general?
So I just got back from a 3,000-mile trip across the country. My annual, I usually do a horizontal and vertical trip. And this one, I just got back a week ago.
Wow.
And so I will say that what is sort of on the minds of voters, what is the most important thing going into the voters, the voting booth, is inflation, is gas prices. Yes, the gas prices have gone down. However, it is still remarably high. $4.29 is nothing to write home about. And there is this sense of uncertainty. And I think if there is any way to describe how voters feel right now is uncertainty. They feel uncertain about government. They feel uncertain about politics. They feel uncertain about how institutions and corporations are behaving.
Yeah.
And that is reflective in how the direction that they're voting. Now, I know that polls are showing that there has been a pause in Republicans winning. However, I really struggle with sort of my brain lining up with that, having just spent so much time. I mean, I'm always on the road, but that's sort of my big trip. And I would point to the Senate race in Colorado as sort of as an example of something that's being missed that I think that is very real between Joe O'Dea and Michael Bennett. And that may be a sleeper and sort of a race, but also an indicator, a harbinger of maybe this wave still exists.
Yeah. Let's do this. We'll grab a couple quick calls. I also want your take on the message, too. There's so much I want to ask you personally, because democracy... I sat back and I said, well, what can you stand on? You know, you can't stand on our situation in international affairs after Afghanistan. You can't deal with energy. We've shut off all this energy, drilling here in our country, natural gas and oil. And we've seen what happens. Energy is directly related to national security. We've seen what's happening with China and a lot of other places right now, as well as the economy, as well as a whole litany of other things for Americans. So if you can't stand on those particular policies, then what do you do? You've got to, I think, try to say, hey, I'm here to save you. I am your knight. I am going to be the light that shatters the darkness. We have to protect democracy so that future generations will say that, yes, you were the ones that did this. You saved us. Is democracy in danger in our country today? There was a poll in August done by NBC, and it claimed that threats to democracy was now a top voter concern above even the cost of living and jobs and the economy. I found that surprising because I really think the dollar is the most important thing. When somebody can't, when they're walking out of a grocery store with far fewer bags, when they fill up a half a tank as opposed to a full tank because they can't afford that, that's far more important than anything else going on. They just want to live. But how do you read that? How do you read the message? I mean, this is kind of a rebrand. Let me lead with this, because during the general elections, he said the same thing. I'm going to lead you out of the cold, dark winter of COVID. I'm going to be a unifier. I'm going to do this. He likes to be kind of the shining knight. Is this a rebrand? And how do you think that message is received? Is there a hunger for it? Is there a need for it? Are the polls accurate?
So I think the polls might be accurate, but the follow-up question isn't asked. Where does that perspective come from? You know, there are a lot of people who are sitting in their homes who might be center-right, right? They vote here, they vote there. They're pretty center-right. But they look at the cultural curators that control everything in this country, meaning government, institutions, academia, corporations, Hollywood, even our national pastime, and they feel as though there is a sort of pressure coming from them to not be center right. Like they feel a pressure from the people who have power, and in their minds that makes them feel as though democracy is fragile.
Mm-hmm.
I think democracy is always fragile. It always has been fragile. It's up to the people, not people governing, to keep it strong. And to that point, I think people in this country outside of my profession and projecting is strong, that bond is strong, and that aspiration of wanting to be part of something bigger than ourselves has not frayed.
Amen to that. You know, as a communicator personally, I never think a message of darkness sells. You know, I think it's a bad message.
Yes, it was awful.
To communicate. I mean, we don't need any more darkness right now. And I know you're saying you're going to lead us out of it, but honestly, we'll see. Daniel in Los Angeles, thanks for waiting so long. You're on the air with Selena Zito. Welcome.
Hi, Drew. I guess my point, you kind of actually touched on it right now, is, you know, former President Trump is no longer in the social media realm. You know, he's no longer running for office. But yet, I feel like the president, as well as some of the Democratic Party, continues to go back. So they talk about moving forward, but yet they keep looking back at, the election between him and President Biden, as well as instead of unifying or talking about, let's say, inflation or the gas prices, which I live in California, so it's been over $5 for so long that if it jumps down, it's not enough to actually make a big difference. But I know you guys are both talking about points of conservatives, such as the schools now. You know, my kids are really young right now. They're not in school yet, but my wife and I have already started to try to plan to send them to private school just because of what's going on in the agenda being pushed by the Democrats.
Well, good for you. So, I hope you can afford it and find a place. Sorry to step on you, Selena, but Daniel, I think that's important. The proper education of our kids, especially in such a woke culture when it comes to academia, is critical. But Selena, go ahead. I'll let you respond.
Well, to his point, the Democrats are never going to stop talking about Trump and never stop trying to demonize people around him. They are looking backwards, which is why they struggle to make a forward-looking speech and a forward-looking message, because they're obsessed with him and tying anyone who voted for him with him. They believe that that is a winning message, that they believe that's their way out of this hole. And we shall see. But voters tend to not vote for darkness. They tend to vote for someone who's going to take them to a better place. That has not been the message to date from the Democrats.
That's well said. Daniel, thank you for sounding off. I appreciate your view. Matt is in Chicago. Selena, he's got a comment for you. Hi, Matt.
Well, hello, Drew. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Listen, Selena, there's many things that you mentioned that I might take issue with. Let me just put this one out there. You say that Trump is not in the public sphere anymore, yet he's still running around the country. He's still making speeches about how there was this massive fraud cast upon him and how he's the victim. In the meantime, every court, including judges that have been appointed by him, have found no fraud. He's on social media talking about how he's the rightful heir, that he should be the president, and how Joe Biden is not. As far as the violence that the president spoke to, you know, we saw Donald Trump talk about the violence that happened in the riots in June 2020. And I quite frankly, if it had been a left-wing mob that had attacked the Capitol on January 6th, I would absolutely have expected the president, whether it be Donald Trump or another Republican, I would have expected them to speak out about that as well. So, Drew, thank you for taking my call, and I look forward to hearing Selena's comments.
Yeah, thank Matt, you. Thank you. Appreciate the view.
I didn't say that Donald Trump wasn't in the public eye. However, voters don't look. I think Democrats in the press are much more obsessed with Donald Trump than voters are. They're not voting about Donald Trump in November. They're voting about their pocketbook, their family, their community, their state, and they're voting about also about crime and about fentanyl. You know, I wrote this and I reported this continuously last November when I was in Virginia. And covering that gubernatorial race between Terry McAuliffe and Glenn Youngkin. And all of my profession was talking about Trump, and all the Democrats were talking about Trump. But all the voters were talking about was not Trump, whether they did or did not support him. Voters always look forward. They never look in the rearview mirror.
True. Yeah, I'm curious as to your take on the former president, Donald Trump. Has he been so beaten up and bruised by the events that took place on January 6th, the whole election fiasco saying he won, and then, of course, the Mar-a-Lago raid, that, you know, for a majority of voters, you know, whether they're conservative, whether they're liberal, doesn't matter, or the independents, those in the middle, has he been sullied enough that if he was to run, it's going to take its toll on whether or not he gets elected? And do you think he is going to run?
I personally have never thought, if anybody's been reading me for the past whatever, I personally not believed that he was going to run again for a multitude of reasons. Before even what happened on January 6th, I have written numerous times, I believe that his behavior after the election, even before January 6th, was wrong, and he should stop talking about the election being stolen, and because it's not true, the election was not stolen, and voters, Trump supporters that I talk to, may still love him, and or they may still love his policies, but not his comportment. Or they may still love the fact that he took the status quo on. They're looking fresh. They're looking new. They may not say that out loud. A poll is not going to capture that, because a poll is going to say, do you still like Donald Trump? Well, you're if you say no, that means that you didn't like him at one point. So voters say yes. However, people are ready to move on. And I have been saying that since 1 month after he lost the election.
Well, I'll tell you what, Selena, I'm going to take a short pause. How much time do you have? Do you have to run, or do you have a few more minutes?
No, I'm good.
Good. Stay with me then. When we come back, a lot of people want to get in on the conversation. And my gratitude to everyone who's holding. I'm going to do my very best in the next segment just to jump right into the phones and take your calls. And, of course, in about 15 minutes or so, we'll also pray at the Chapel of Divine Mercy. Let's pray for our president. Let's pray for our country. Right? Let's pray for unity. And let's pray against the spirit of divisiveness that we see so manifest today. My guest, Selena Zito. Our conversation will continue right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's about 10 minutes away. Good afternoon. It's good to be here with you. I'm Drew Mariani, joined today by Selena Zito. You can check her out, a very gifted columnist at the New York Post and the Washington Examiner. She has just traveled 3,000 miles, taking the temperature of the country, and has joined me today to give us a view from the ground. Where is the heart of the American people? How do they view what's unfolding in the world of politics? And how are many people responding to the president's address yesterday? And Selena, it's always good to have you with us. We have a few minutes, so we'll jump right into the phones. And Rose is listening to us in Chula Vista, California. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Drew. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Your guest is awesome. And I feel so sad that Biden said what he said yesterday. I'm a devout Catholic, and I have been praying for that man from the first day he stepped foot in the office.
Good for you.
And I can't help but feel that he needs that more than anything else. You can hear hate in him, and he's the president of the greatest country in the world. And for him to talk down to American Republicans is just so shameful to me.
Yeah, well, thank you for your call. And you know, Rose, I just want to jump in on you for a second. We're going to have a few minutes. I'm going to get a few other calls. But I think your point's really, really good. I don't know if it's hate that I hear as much as I hear anger from the president. His speeches all tend to be delivered the same way. But your call to pray for him, I just want to commend you for that. I do every single day. When I go to Mass, in my time with the Lord, when I pray, I pray for our world leaders. I pray for peace and for unity. And I pray for the soul of Joe Biden. Because as a Catholic like you, he's had the sacraments. He knows his position on issues like life and so many other things has radically, radically changed. And it's really quite tragic. I'm not quite sure what motivated those radical change other than power. I'll leave it at that. Let's just pray for him. Selena, just to follow up on that, if you could follow up, what happened to Joe Biden on so many of these positions? If you look back at his career, and he's had a very long one in the world of politics and the Senate, he's radically changed. Actually became kind of rabid even towards life. In his speech last night, you know, he talked about these MAGA Republicans are extreme, right? They don't want a woman to have the ability to choose, aka, you know, abort or kill her child. They're against contraception. They're against marrying those you love. He went through this litany of things. And to me, that's extreme. To me, that is the opposite end of my worldview. You know, I believe life is sacred from the moment of conception through natural death. We've seen the consequences of artificial contraception. You know, Humanae Vitae is a great document that espouses where that would lead. And we see what's happening with religious persecution, which is a byproduct of the Obergefell decision. Just if you could quickly, I mean, what happened to Joe Biden? What happened in terms of his political view? What's driving and motivating him?
Two things. You've touched on the first one, power. We all know that power changes people, either in the pursuit of it or achieving it. But also, you know, who you surround yourself with. I mean, my grandma used to always say, and I think everybody grandma said this, if you, you know, ride with dogs, you're going to get fleas. It's just, it when you surround yourself with people who are also in that exact same pursuit of power, right? There becomes this sort of aura that you start to hold that you believe you are better, superior, more knowledgeable than everyone else. And then you start to believe that the people that don't share your worldview are evil. And I have to agree with your last caller. I felt very heavy after that speech last night. I can't think of another word to describe it other than heavy. It made me very sad that a sitting president of the United States spoke about half the country in that way.
Yeah, I said to my wife, I think it was meant to be inspirational on his part, but it clearly was not delivered that way. And I think it was the absolute opposite, as you point out. He came away with a very negative feeling, a spirit of darkness, not
dark.
One of light.
It was very dark and heavy. Very sad.
Richmond, Minnesota's next. Craig, thanks for waiting. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Selena Zito.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering if you could explain the difference between like a republic and a democracy, or maybe rather just explain why we're trying to uphold the democracy if we, you know, in the Pledge of Allegiance we testify that we're under a republic. Are these words used interchangeably? Or?
Yeah, I'll give you a quick definition, and Selena, you can follow up on it. Is the United States a democracy or is it a republic? You know, the answer is really both. U.S. isn't a pure democracy in which every decision is put to popular vote. That's not how it works here today. The word democracy is thrown around pretty fluently today. We are more of a representative government, a republic, you know, which sometimes those words are democracy and republic are interchangeable here in America today. But the government is invested with power by the people. You know, and that is the difference. I'll let you also respond, Selena. So go ahead if you'd like.
Well, I think perfect explanation, but I think that these words are now used flippantly.
Yes.
And used too casually for the sort of reverence behind their importance, and they're used to be a wedge rather than. An explainer of political positions. So I struggle with anybody using that as a way to make a political point, no matter what side of the aisle it's on.
You're right, Selena. Let's go to Joe in San Francisco. Hi, Joe. Good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for taking my call. I guess the speech last night was I was hearing the deplorable speech by Hillary Clinton, so I'm branding this speech as a deplorable 2.0. I vote Democrat. Now I changed my mind. That changed my mind completely.
Wow.
But I'm going to vote Republican this coming election.
That's amazing. Well, Joe, thank you. What motivated you to change that? Why are you switching from one side to the other?
Because it's so much anger in his voice that's not a true leader. A true leader is a true uniter of a country that's really divided right now. But the way he delivered the speech, that he kind of made one side bad.
It's like more
virtue signaling. So it's like the hypocrisy is kind of
and
embarrassment for the country.
You know, and if we're divided, if we're in a bad way, I mean, I also think we should take personal responsibility sometimes. Is it particular policies? Was it a failing on my part that we did X? You are right about that, and I'm so grateful for your call. And, Selena, I'd like to get your take on what he said as well. I know we've got a couple moments left, but I love what he had to say.
Well, actually, Joe is very similar to several people that I spoke to today. Who consider themselves Democrat, But, you know, not like, you know, someone on Twitter who's using it as like a hammer to hit someone over with. But, you know, that's what they grew up with. However, they look around in their community and they see their neighbors. They know they voted Republican in the past or in the future. And these are their friends. These are the people they go to block party with and sit in a pew with in church and maybe work with or coach Little League with. And they say, well, these people aren't hateful. They're not semi-fascist. Right. These are my friends. And I can't get with them being used in such a, honestly, a dangerous way. And yeah. I think there are a lot more Joes out there.
Yeah.
Then we understand. Then it's going to be picked up in the poll.
And Joe, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I do, and I am grateful for everyone on hold. My deepest apology. I wish I could get you all in the air. And Selena, thank you for the time. I want to give your website a big plug. Selena Zito, SalenaZito.com. SelenaZito.com. Go check out that website and read her writings. You'll be glad you did. And she'll be back again. We'll talk to her, I'm sure, in the not-too-distant future. Hey, safe travels, and thanks for your good writing, Selena. We'll catch up soon, okay?
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
You got it. The chaplain is straight ahead. Let's pray.